ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Oh, Mauricio gets into one. He's looking for his first home run of the year. He has it. Oh, baby. Maldonado, welcome back.
Here, Yordan sends one deep to left field, all the way back. Yelich, that's a slam!
Yordan Alvarez hits one out to left, a grand slam, and the Astros up 10-1.
He's Blank. I am Joe George, filling in for Jeremy Branham as the Houston Cougars attempt to win one last AAC championship in baseball. So Jeremy leaves us today.
Priorities, huh?
Josh Chevy behind the glass. Junior Bronco in the chat. What's up?
Junior's going to have a field day with you today.
A big field day. How are you, Joel?
I'm good, Joe. How are you? You look extremely non-tall.
Yeah, I got to get a different chair. This is a huge mistake. I didn't prepare fast enough. I look like...
Wait, you didn't prepare?
I look like BK right now. You can barely see me above the desk in my computer. He's 6'4 and looks like he's 5'2 on an average day.
I don't think anyone's ever going to compare the two of you.
I don't think so either. Obviously, we've got a lot to get into today.
The Astros. That subject in a hurry.
Smashed the Brewers last night. Yes. Yordan Alvarez was awesome. Dubon, Maldi go deep, as you just heard there. The calls from AT&T Sportsnet. And we got Jalen Green stuff to get into because he has thoughts. Subtle thoughts. On James Harden. D'Amico Ryan's met with the media today after OTAs. You guys can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Pac-Man Joel. But let's get right into it, Joel, from last night. It's funny, yesterday on the show, we talked about how the offense, and really you were kind of started this conversation, was like how the offense didn't do enough versus the Oakland A's. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday they faced one of the best pitchers in baseball, and they demolished Corbin Burns.
They really did. And the thing is, I had my reservations because the schedule's been so cushy that they're doing what they're supposed to do, but now here's the real challenge to really kind of get a barometer of, are they all the way back? Are they really playing at a level that we want to believe, but it's almost like fool's gold when you're playing such bad teams? And they just manhandled the Brewers and one of the better pitchers in baseball over the last couple of years, and it just goes to show you that even with the struggles of some of the guys in the lineup, it's not about the pieces. It's about together as a unit, this offense is capable of doing these kind of things. There was the double-digit numbers I was looking for against the A's, but it means more when you do it against a first-place team and one of the better pitchers in baseball.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, and yesterday's game was, because I agree, like you beat the Cubs two out of three, you sweep the A's. Like, those are two of the worst teams in baseball. The A's are literally a minor league.
Well, and even take it just to the last, you take two out of three out of the White Sox.
Yes.
And they had, you know, they had gone through a recent stretch where they lost 10 in a row. So that wasn't a major accomplishment.
So look, it's not like they, like we just said, like they're not beating murderer's row here. But last night, Milwaukee's played very well this season. They've got a good offense, a really good pitcher on the mound last night. And the Astros just did what they want to do with them. And what was interesting is when the lineup came out, I love Jeremy's new gimmick of just tweeting what's wrong with Dusty's lineup today. Yeah. And then watching the responses that come through. But the immediate reaction was like, where's Altuve? Regular day off, no big deal. He'll be in the lineup today and tomorrow. We'll see about Jeremy Pena after getting hit.
That's not great. I had real big concerns the minute that he got hit going, and flashbacks to Altuve going, please no. With the way this team's been playing, especially now, this is not the time.
No. There's been so many injuries on this team. Like, the last thing you need, even though like it would kind of force Mauricio Dubon back into the lineup, and I know people were excited to see him last night back in there for Altuve. It's you don't want to see him back in the lineup because Pena's hurt.
Right.
So, but the lineup overall, and then the funny thing is there's so few lefties in the Brewers, Dusty Baker went immediately back to Tucker and Alvarez hitting back-to-back. And I think that's the one thing we've learned from the last, like, week or so, is that if your opposing team has two or three lefties that are of quality, Jose Abreu is going to hit in the middle of Alvarez and Tucker. If there's not a lot of lefties, they're going to hit back-to-back. But when are these people going to learn? Like, I thought baseball people were smart, Joel.
Well, not all of them. But I mean,
why do they keep pitching to Alvarez with lefties? It doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
You mentioned two different things because I think one's going to become more relevant and prevalent than it has to this point. And that is the lefties is not working where everybody thinks, well, we're just going to go to lefty on lefty matchup. He's going to struggle. He's not going to have the same kind of command of the plate and it's going to change things. And baseball has found out rather quickly that that is not going to work. So the next thing you're going to do is you're going to see the Barry Bonds deep freeze. You're going to start seeing, especially how Dusty constructs his lineup, it will become more relevant because of the fact that he's going to be given a four-pitch walk and the four fingers are coming out of the visiting or the opponent's dugout. And now it's going to be, what will you do next? And if it's Abreu, probably expectations are going to be extremely low. If it's Tucker, you still have a chance. I know it's lefty-lefty and Dusty hates it, but it has to be the way you set the lineup up if you know that Yordan is going to be free passed a lot.
Yeah, and that's where I think going forward, like we're going to see this more because it's just your lineup's at its best, you know, when that's happened. But the other thing with yesterday's game, and obviously there's a lot of at-bats here, but, you know, Bregman going 2-for-6, Jose Abreu going 2-for-5. Nice to see those guys, you know, slowly get it going. It feels like Jose Abreu, like he is second on the team in OBP over the last like 9 days. So while the power's not there, the strikeout numbers are still high. This is probably the best. It's really sad. This is probably the best we've seen Jose Abreu so far this season. Like he's playing his best ball like so far at this moment. And you hope that like when we get to the playoffs and the end of the season, that we still look back on this first 2 months of the year and we say, that's not the guy who we ended up being. But at least there's light at the end of the tunnel. It feels like for Jose Abreu for the first time this year.
Look, Joe, look, and I'm not going to say anything about his general manager skills, but if Bagwell spends time with you early batting practice at the cages, there's something to be gained from that because we can nitpick and we can point fingers and I think rightfully so show where Jeff Bagwell really came up short in a lot of ways in the moves he made in the offseason. Jeff Bagwell knows how to hit a baseball. He's in the Hall of Fame. He knows the strike zone and he knows how to analyze a hitter. He talked about through the telecast last night from Dubon to others coming to him to ask for what to do if things aren't going correctly. So if we know, and we saw the videos on social media, that he spent, along with Alex Cintron, time in early BP with Abreu last night, and then you see Abreu start to put some hits together, there is a correlation to be made where I feel good about the fact that aside from your hitting coaches, you have a guy that is accessible that could possibly help get this guy out of this funk.
Yeah, and we talked about it yesterday on the show about, you know, will Jeff Bagwell address the Jose Abreu sign? And he didn't directly, but in the next segment, we'll play some audio from you guys from the broadcast last night for with Baggy discussing Jose Abreu's struggles and why he thinks that it's still not permanent. And it was interesting. And just the other thing from last night, besides Christian Javier and the bullpen pitching phenomenally again, I mean, what odds would you have taken, Joel, that Mauricio Dubon would hit a homer before Jose Abreu this season?
I almost texted you last night. I'm like, the ball is flying out of there so quickly and so fast last night that maybe Abreu has a chance.
I mean, look, Corey Jolks, Maldonado, and Dubon went deep last night. It felt like it was Abreu's time.
It really did.
If it wasn't last night,
it was about the fifth inning, and it was starting to get out of hand. I'm like, you know, I should text Joe. There's a chance that we might see a four-bagger for Abreu yet. You never know.
It really felt like last night was, if it's not last night, when is it ever going to happen? Just because they were crushing it. And I don't think, you know, the main thing from last night that just, I can't get enough of is just how great Yordan Alvarez is. He is just on a different planet. And he showed it again last night, the two home runs. There's just nothing like, I mean, he has become must-watch television.
Well,
you know the bases are loaded and he's coming up. Like, you have to tune in.
And the thing is, it's not boom or bust. The thing that's so beautiful about all of this is after he absolutely annihilated two pitches, had six RBIs and two bombs, he comes up with a laser up the middle that was hit almost as hard as the two home runs.
Yeah.
And you're like, this dude is just good. And then what I really love, and it was great this weekend, I don't know if you saw it or not, but they did a thing where they slow-mo'd his swing and they showed where his hands were, how he released the hips, where his head always stayed. I recorded it just to show my daughter over and over again when I'm trying to tell her how to hit a softball the same way every time, going, it is just so picture perfect the way he sets his hands. He keeps his weight back and his head never wobbles or Jake Myers is around with a helmet falling off. it's amazing the way people give him so much credit for power that they kind of neglect what a good just overall hitter he is. And now without the shift, he can hit it anywhere and hit it like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, and just the only other thing I had from last night's game, we saw Parker Mashinsky come in, get an inning in, 18 pitches, one strikeout, gave up a hit in that inning. He replaced Gage. So Dusty gets to keep his lefty.
Do you feel, though, that Gage was replaced because he struggles mightily with that getting set and that balk? Because it is extremely awkward.
Oh, yeah. I think it's definitely possible.
I think they're sending him to Sugarland to figure that out.
I'll be honest. I saw Jeremy's tweet yesterday. I forgot Parker Mashinsky existed.
I did too.
Like he wasn't on when we've talked about all these injuries that have happened this season. Like Parker Mashinsky is never a name that we're like, when's he coming back? He's just has kind of been, irrelevant to like what's been going on the season for the Astros. He's Joel Blank. I'm Joe George filling in for Jeremy Branham here on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, Jeff Bagwell was in the booth last night. He gave his thoughts on what's been going on with Jose Abreu. You'll hear from Baggy next here on the Killer Bees. I almost said the bullpen on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's Joe George filling in for Jeremy Branham alongside Joel Blank as always on the Killer Bees here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You guys are always welcome in at 713-780-3776 on the HRMP listener and text line. How do you feel about Jose Abreu after his two-hit night and what he's done over the last couple days? Before we hear from Jeff Bagwell here, Joel. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a little bit in the last segment, but do you see signs that there is progress being made with Jose Abreu? That even if mechanically it's not there yet, there is light at the end of the tunnel, that he might turn this around?
So I'm not going to say that there's not light at the end of the tunnel. I still think he can turn it around. I think that even when we hear from Baggy, he basically sees that there are signs that it's not complete. I think Bagwell is just like any general manager that makes a move like he made, that he's going to have to cover his own ass and, sure, and hope for the best. I really don't. I don't, because the hits he got last night were like,
hard contact.
They were like wet sacks. You know, it kind of went as a hit, yeah, and it just squeaked over the shortstop's glove or fell in the right spot. It's not like he's getting hip turn and hitting a laser down the line or in between third and short or pounding. I think one thing that was interesting, because Baggy mentioned it with, I want to say Dubon or somebody else as well, but I think one of the philosophies that Baggy likes to preach is to try and take everything to right and right center, and that'll make you a better coverage hitter across the plate. Abreu's first hit was to right field. So I think that maybe one of the things they were working on, at least what I took away from hearing that and then seeing the results, was that maybe at least for the time being, because we know Abreu's not going to bring a ton of power anyway, is that if he tries that approach, he won't be jumping on pitches or, you know, guessing, and when he guesses wrong, looking really bad, and he's just looking to try and do what he did last night, hit it where they ain't.
Yeah, it's almost just like make contact of any kind and hope that the, you know, what's the one stat? BABIP, there's balls in play. Like, you hope that it falls your way, that you can stop.
Josh, stop. if you want to isolate all
child,
of that, what he just
child,
said,
but child. Wow. We're going to hear from Jeff Bagwell. Here's Jeff Bagwell last night on the broadcast talking about Jose Abreu.
Chance to talk to you on the broadcast. What have you seen from Abreu this year, and how is he getting closer?
Yeah, I will tell the fans, he's going to be fine. He's got a long track record, and he's going through it right now. All he's doing is he's getting stuck a little bit. He's getting kind of over his body in front, and he gets stuck, which means he kind of has to, his bat head, his brain tells his bat head get to the ball, and that means he has to stay lean back, and he either gets jammed or he tops the ball. Every single person that's played this game has been through what he's been through right now. New team and all that, it's a lot of frustration, but let me tell you something, nobody cares more than Jose.
And nobody works harder.
No.
A little uncomfortable swing at that first.
He is, you know, and this is part of it. It becomes in your brain. I don't care how long you've been playing this game. Mentally, you get really messed up. And he's just going through it right now. But all it takes is one swing, one pitch, and he can start doing what he normally does.
So we essentially know that no one works harder than Jose Altuve. And the fact that Altuve got back quicker than he was supposed to, and he does those things, because he really didn't say Abreu. And maybe he shouldn't have, because I don't think anybody works harder than Jose Altuve. But I know what he's trying to do there is indirectly stick up for his guy.
Yeah, he's trying to pump him up and say that it's going to get better. And like I think the one thing that, you know, when we had Michael Bourne on a couple weeks ago, he talked about the same thing. New team, new city, not comfortable, new ballpark, like all of it. It all factors in. And then I think you have to factor in with him specifically, it does, the age matters. That like all those changes are challenging for any player in any sport, but also being 36 years old, like you're falling off a cliff pretty quickly.
Well, there's more reason for concern. Yeah. Because a younger guy with quicker twitch, you don't know when it's going to fall off, right? Because Brady is the one example where he just consistently beat Father Time. Most guys aren't that lucky or successful.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of times the fall off is abrupt. And so if you're 36 and you got a 3-year deal and you're making 20 a year, the first thing you look at is the money. And the second thing you look at is the age and go, I don't know if he's going to be capable of snapping out.
Yeah, I think we all hope, obviously we all hope he is, because it's way more fun. Like if you get Abreu of last year and he's hitting between Tucker and Alvarez with Bregman and Altuve in front of those guys, this lineup that's already the best in baseball is just even better. Like if you get even a fraction of what he was last year and in his career, you have a much better baseball player than you have right now. But going back to, you know, your experience, you know, kind of, I know it's different sports, basketball versus, you know, Major League Baseball, but like when you look at a guy who's struggling this much, and he really hasn't had these struggles ever in his career, how hard is it for him to break out of that from your view?
You know, I think, and we're going to talk about it later as it relates to like basketball players like Carmelo Anthony. I think that the difficulty you deal with the ego of a professional athlete is once you've been at the very highest level of success, it's the same way Baggy was talking about with his hitting approach, right? Your brain tells you that you are never falling off that pedestal of how good you are and where your abilities lie as it relates to others within the league. But the eye test of everybody else and the coaching staffs and the broadcasters and the fans say otherwise and say, you're not the player you were 3 years ago, 5 years ago, when you won an MVP, when you were doing the things that you were capable of doing. And the first thing that you point to with Abreu is you don't have any pop. You didn't have consistent pop throughout your career, but you had timely pop. And you had good numbers at the end of the season when it came to pop and extra base hits. You have none of that now. So the first thing you say is, well, is that hip turn? Is that are you capable of staying back and keeping your weight and being able to do some things to adjust? But he wasn't catching up with the fastball so far since he's been with the Astros. Whether it's a home run or a single, we saw him last year and in whatever the Astros team in the playoffs. The one guy that ended up getting hits was Abreu. Mm-hmm. He found holes. He found extra doubles. He hit the ball hard. I'm not seeing any of that.
No, and I think there's, you know, what would you say the odds are? Like, where would you put it?
On
like
what?
A percentage
him
that
snapping
he's
out of this?
Snapping out of and much better than it was before.
Well, I mean, better than he was before if he's coming from hot garbage. I mean, it's a lot easier to do. If you are going to get a guy that you expected from what he did last year, even in Chicago, I think the chances are maybe 60%.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Like, there's like a 60% chance. And the other thing that happened last night is the Rangers lost. And I know we've talked a lot about on the show about
they're going to catch him.
Standing watch and like and where you're at. But ever since we played that take from Paul that they'd be in first place by the end of the month, and then we talked about it on the show, I've been watching a lot more. And the Rangers hitting is pretty good. I mean, they've got like a plus 100 run differential right now. But the Astros are only a game back. They've won 8 straight games. Yeah, I'm officially a team they're going to pass the Rangers by the end of the month.
See? And I never changed.
Yeah, I just felt like a game or two.
Yeah, I felt like the 9 games didn't mean much to me. It just means enough to me that the way the Astros are starting to snap out of it and put wins together, and then they start building momentum and they start believing more in themselves. The pitching has always been solid. Now, if the offense, it doesn't have to be every guy, but like I said, it's the consistency of all of the parts together, even when a couple of them are struggling, where I believe wholeheartedly by the end of the month, they're going to be in first place.
Yeah, and last night's game is really, you know, when you just get a little bit of contribution from, you know, Jose Abreu, and a little bit from other guys. Now, you got a lot of contribution last night. I mean, Dubon, Maldi, both going deep. Jake Myers, another great day. And we haven't even talked about that catch yet. He's clearly not scared of the wall anymore.
No.
Dude. Like, easy.
Sometimes I just wonder about the level of intelligence overall when he goes and does some of those things. Like the one, I love that Baggy got on him for the batting helmet too, because you know it's been an annoying point of contention for me all year.
Yeah,
but the fact that I just think if there's one guy that has no idea about thinking through the warning track when you're getting close to the wall, it's Jake Myers.
But it was almost like this sign that he's back. That like
maybe
like his bat. His fielding, like, I mean, we talked about last year. I'm sure you talked about last year that he just wasn't the same guy.
Well, you listened every day.
Most days. Yeah. He just wasn't the same guy. Like, the arm wasn't there. The confidence looked lackluster. He didn't look as confident in the field. But last night, I mean, just turning up and just going full blast in the wall, it shows he has no fear anymore. So if there were concerns at any point for Jake Myers, you know, personally about re-injuring that shoulder, I think they're all gone now.
Yeah, I think that I used to point it out that it was in all phases of the game. It was one thing to say, hey, look, when he dove forward for a ball, he checked his rotators. When he went back for a ball, as the minute he felt the warning track, it was, you know, scared to death, let's pull the brakes, let's pull the chute. At the plate, he looked like deer in the headlights. All of those have been erased.
Yeah.
And maybe last night was the final straw, because I think he started to get up thinking, oh, God, I'm hurt again. And then realized he wasn't. His head might have been hurt.
I mean, his face, he was a big, deep breath. Like, you could tell, like, he was feeling it last night.
Yep.
Just quickly before we go to break, do you expect to see Pena tonight and tomorrow? I'm going to say no.
I don't think you see him tonight. I don't. I just think, I was surprised he went back out there. I get, maybe that was a message for everybody that I'm okay.
Yeah.
And that's why they did it. Because otherwise, with that lead, there's no business doing it. But I think that like every other decision they've made recently about bordering on the cautious side, I think you'll see Dubon at shortstop
tonight. Yeah, no, I agree. I think we're going to see Dubon at shortstop at a minimum tonight, if not tomorrow as well.
Plus, it's a quick turnaround because it's a day game on Wednesday, so there might be 2 days they give him off.
Yeah, and you have off on Thursday. So, like, I mean, look, I've never taken 99 to the hand before. What's the hardest pitch you ever get hit by?
I mean,
do you know?
I don't know exactly, but I know that playing at the level of college baseball I play,
probably like mid-80s?
I rarely saw anything over 94, 95, but I've taken 80-some to the shoulder blade and, to the leg.
That sounds like a miserable experience. He's Joel Blank. Fun. I'm Joe George. Coming up next, Jalen Green was on Paul George's podcast.
And
Paul
I took George, a laser to the almost grapes. Thank God I was wearing a cup that day.
I watched some video of some guy take one in the...
Mm.
And he was not wearing a cup. And
no.
I've never seen a guy roll around on the ground in much pain as he was. But Jalen Green was on Paul George's podcast yesterday, and they had a discussion about the idea of James Harden coming back to Houston. Paul George, not a fan. Jalen Green seems kind of mixed. You'll hear that audio in our reaction next here on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham. On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
So George and Joel Blank here with you on the Killer Bees today from 12 to 3 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Jeremy Branham out calling some baseball games. Send all your dumb texts and questions to him at Jeremy Branham.
Thumbs up. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs. Hopefully they get a win.
Well, he doesn't have to be here tomorrow.
Well, he's not going to be here no matter what.
Okay, well then we're good.
Because double elimination.
Oh,
I didn't know they did that in college baseball tournaments.
I thought that was one and done.
I thought it was only in the College World Series, but apparently in all the tournaments, it's two games. So today, Kelly Eco of The Athletic reported again.
Friend of the show.
Yeah. That James Harden has emerged as top free agent target for the Houston Rockets. Now, Kelly reported that on March 1st, you know, kind of just doubling down the other side of it now. Before it was mutual interest, now he's top target. So to me, it's same story, different headline. Like, everyone knows James Harden is the number one target for Tillman Fertitta, Patrick Fertitta, and maybe others in the organization.
I don't think there's maybe others. I think he got the two.
Well, I think the one thing, the Chris Haynes story, I think it was, or the guy from Philadelphia who reported that
he started the train down the tracks. Then Haynes actually put some specifics on.
Yeah, that they told the coaches as they were interviewing them, including Udoka, like they asked them what they thought about James Harden, how he fit in the offense on the defense. And the more I think about it, it just feels inevitable. Like that this decision has been made. Like there is no chance almost that James Harden isn't coming back. I don't think this is a power play anymore for Philadelphia, even though it seems like he helped get Doc Rivers fired. I think Daryl Morey is going to lose this battle.
I don't.
You think there's still a chance he goes to stays in Philly?
Yeah, there's a chance for sure. I'm not going to, as long as you say, you know, is it cut and dried, they're out? No. I think there's a chance, and I think it's what this is gamesmanship at this point. Now, I think from a Houston Rockets perspective, it's real because I think that Tillman and his son really see that as much as you're trying to stick to a plan that you believe in for the long term for the Houston Rockets as a basketball team, as a franchise, you are hurting. And you saw it at the gate, and you saw it with the ratings, and you saw it personally with the advertisers that weren't there for all of the broadcasts and the telecasts and everything that they've been trying to do, and the jersey sales, and all the gear, and all the everything else that goes with it. The numbers are gross, how far down they've fallen. And they want to resurrect that, and they believe that if they stick to their plan, which is something that we've talked about, which would be a two-year Harden experience.
Sure.
I think that would make some, though I still am completely against it, that's where as an owner it could make some sense because for those 2 years, the return on the investment and the being a plus, not a minus, would be that, yes, we're paying him all this money, but in the process, the ticket sales back. The national interest comes around. The merchandise
sales national start. Television games come back.
That too.
I mean, how many have they had since James Harden left?
Not many.
Like one? I think they had one last year and none the year before. And I think the only one this year was because they put Jabari and Banchero one-on-one on like TNT or NBA TV.
Okay. Like because I came from the times when I was dealing with the league about going over and how we could still do a local on AT&T because we were in such demand with national TV.
Yeah, because like, and just to, so that's the rule is that you have to carry X amount of games on TV. What's like 70?
There's a limit that you can be on national TV exclusively, and then you have anything over that, national TV can still televise it, but you have the right to do it locally with your announcer.
Yeah, so Jalen Green was on Paul George's podcast, and here is a discussion. You're mostly going to hear Paul. And we're going to have to fill in some gaps here because Jalen Green can't talk into a microphone. You'll hear him mostly at the end. Interview. But it's mostly going to be Paul George's thoughts on James Harden returning to Houston with a little bit of Jalen Green sprinkled in.
There's obviously been some links of James wanting to come back to the team. Mm. Like, I feel like at this point, you're the king of Houston. Yeah. Like, you got to go through this. You got to go through being double team, being triple team, you know, being the target every time. Yeah. You got to go through that. And you bring on someone like James, who's such a ball dominant player, like that's going to hinder your growth a little bit. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Regardless of how it can elevate you on another level of him teaching you and you learning off of him, I feel like for you, you've already been through the fire. So, like, let you continue to learn. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. I think it play both ways. Like you just said, it could help and hurt at the same time. I didn't really talk to him too much about the rumors and stuff like that. I'm with you on that.
But the big thing that I take away from that and to help fill in the gaps a little bit, when Paul George says that James Harden can hinder your growth, Jalen Green says facts.
Yep.
And then I agree. Now, at the end, he explains how it can go both ways. And I agree. Like, there can be a path to where James Harden helps develop Jalen Green as a spot up shooter, as you know, in just different parts of his game. But he'll hinder you as well because he's not going to be the primary ball handler, the primary scorer on this Rockets team. I think the King of Houston thing is a little ooh. I mean, I guess he is by default.
He's going to get overthrown if that's the hierarchy, but.
But where does when you talk about James Harden returning, and we've spent so much kind of talking about like the business side of it, just Harden focused. But in terms of like putting Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, James Harden, the fourth overall pick, whoever it is, putting those guys on a court together, do you think, Joel, it hinders more or it can help Jalen and these guys grow?
I've said this. I guess sometimes it takes podcasts and players and national media to jump on board. But I've said this is the main reason I don't want James Harden back in Houston, because I see it doing nothing but stunting the growth of this really good, talented young roster of players that could actually amount to something. The one way that you stunt their growth is you bring in a veteran that's ball dominant, that has already made one of the statements he made to Chris Haynes was, I want to come back to a team to where I'm not just a guy that distributes. I want to go back to being the old James.
Yeah.
The old James doesn't fit with the new Rockets. Mm-hmm. The new Rockets have too many young, talented players trying to find their way and get their experience. And to what Paul George said, which I've said for weeks, is quite honestly, nothing is going to stunt their growth more than taking the ball out of their hands so that James can have it in his hands 90% of the time.
Yeah, that, and then Ime Udoka, some of the interviews he's done with Kelly and then with Jonathan Fagan, I think it was recently, when you know he's talked a lot about defense. And you look at the Boston Celtics, what they did their 1 year, they were one of the worst teams in the NBA defensively until January. And then something clicked. Like, he finally got his message through, and the Celtics have been one of the best teams defensively in the NBA until they're about to get swept by the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
I don't know how James Harden plus Jalen Green equals good defense.
It does. Like,
that's where if that's the direction you want to go as a basketball team, I feel like we're speaking two different languages here between the front office and the coaching staff.
Already. There's no, you're talking about the ownership, not even the front office, because, and honestly, Harden doesn't like Rafael Stone as the general manager, and he wanted out when Rafael Stone was named the general manager. He liked him when he was the legal counsel that was basically the fluffer that walked around giving him whatever he wanted, you know, across the organization. But he and Russell Westbrook were staunchly against him being the general manager. And the thing is that I think that Rafael knows in his heart of hearts and in his brain that as much as they wanted to appease James, even when they left, when they didn't have to, which annoyed me, it's a different story when you're trying to bring back a player that isn't anywhere near the ability he was at when he left, and then appeasing him thinking that he's going to have some of that left in the tank to be able to do. And that's one thing. But then how does it negatively affect the development of the guys that you've already been giving the ball to?
Sure.
And showing them the way and allowing them to do the things? That's why I say this is not the old James, but this James does not need to be mixed in with the new Rockets.
Yeah, and even though I think we're going to lose this battle and what we hope to see versus what actually happens with James Harden, how they put this together afterwards I think is what's the most interesting, because you know, the Rockets can be a playoff team next year with James Harden and another veteran, I think. But my biggest issue, which is like fundamentally with this team, you saw with Dallas this year once they acquired Kyrie Irving, they were just a turnstile with both their guards, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving.
But you pissed off Luka in the process. And that's the other thing you can't do.
Well, we're going to talk about that on their side. Can you piss off Jalen Green? Should Jalen Green have a say in James Harden coming back to town? I think the general answer is no. But as Jalen Green, I mean, is he the king of Houston? Should he have that say?
No.
We'll get Joel's take.
No, no, break. And no. And we'll talk about the rest of it, but I'm just telling you right now.
The answer is no.
No, no, and no.
He's on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel. I'm on Twitter at Joe George Radio. It's the Killer Bees here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
You can find us on Twitter at Joe George Radio, at Pac-Man Joel. I'm in for Jeremy today. He should be back tomorrow on the road from Tampa Bay. He's going to go see McClanahan pitch.
Oh, that's right. He said he was going to the. I heard someone on SportsCenter call it the juice box.
No,
that's an insult, right?
You can't.
They're playing that rinky dink, nasty, gimmicky railings on and walkways all over the place. Has been of a dome stadium, and you're going to call that the juice box as opposed to Minute Maid?
No, you got. Isn't it the Trop?
Yeah, but Trop and Minute Maid are both juices.
Yeah, I guess I've never heard anyone call it a juice box.
Yeah, someone tried to be cute on SportsCenter.
Well, it's probably someone that doesn't really know anything about baseball.
Bury that one.
Usually ESPN plus baseball is not a marriage of intelligent conversations.
They got Joel Osteen on there a lot talking about baseball.
It's true. Okay. It's true. All right, so, you know, Jalen Green, when asked, or as Paul George is discussing the idea of, you know, James Harden hindering his development, he says facts. And then he kind of backs off like pretty quickly. But should Jalen Green be in a position with this team, with what was invested in draft-wise? You know, he's probably your top jersey sales guy. Like, should he have a voice?
No.
At this point in the organization?
No. I don't think so.
I mean, I don't think so either. But
I think you take Milwaukee as the exact polar opposite Milwaukee should be catering to Giannis. I think in a certain way they did, and the reason why everybody's asking why is Budenholzer no longer the coach. Well, you look, no, and what you mentioned last segment about a guy like Luka, you want to appease Luka. At a certain point with the ability that he has, if you appease him and he stays long-term, he becomes the next Dirk, and he becomes your franchise's savior. If you piss him off, he'll play his cards right and get out. And now we've proven that in sports, you can get out even if you have a long-term contract, and you can find a new home if you're not happy. And so you have to appease them.
Yeah.
I don't think Jalen Green's anywhere near that. I think Jalen Green is just a piece right now that is, you're hoping, going to pan out to be more like what people said when he was about to get drafted. And everybody said, oh, he's the next coming of Kobe. Well, I hope everybody has completely, I know there's plenty of people that said it that are trying to forget about it. But I hope that everybody has moved on from that notion to say, I just hope he can be all-star caliber, because I don't even see that. I mean, empty 30-point games based on nothing but ISO basketball means nothing to me. Like, you play both ends of the floor. You play through the whistle. You do the things to where you can show, you take over the game, and you take your team on your shoulders when it's nut-cutting time. But instead, we've seen a guy that, much like you mentioned with James Harden, if the shot doesn't fall and or I thought I got fouled, I don't have to play defense.
Yeah, and that's where I'm a little more positive on Jalen. First of all, I think anyone that, you know, prides themselves as a draft analyst in any sport and throws around an all-time great player as a comparison is, like, largely not good at their job. Because, first, it's just so unrealistic. To try to label someone as the next Kobe is such a joke. Like, he can be Zach LaVine. Like, that's a reachable, like, milestone for Jalen Green. And then it's, can you pass that guy? Can you be a guy who scores 25 points plus on a night, but can you do it more consistently? Can you be a guy that, like, when he was in Minnesota, it took a while for him to develop? Like, can you develop more quickly than Zach LaVine did? Like, that should be what Jalen Green is working towards. The only caveat I would say with, like, in terms of appeasing Jalen Green and having him be part of these conversations, Joel, is that what if he does develop? Like, if he does develop into a guy that can be a superstar, but James Harden and him don't get along, you're now headed down the path of Jalen Green being upset, and you're going to have to worry about if he trusts this organization. And I know that's all, it's ifs and buts and maybes, but is James Harden worth the risk? And that's where I think the answer is no, and why you have to at least loop Jalen Green in on the conversation.
Let's go back to the one that we think and we know that we can trust in Chris Haynes, if what he reported is true and there's no reason not to believe it. And that is, James Harden wants a 4-year deal. And he wants it to start and be in the ballpark of $50 million a year. When you start talking about those extra 2 years, I'm sure that the owner doesn't think about this as much as the basketball operations should. I don't know if they do. But you're going to have contracts coming up over those last 2 years of some of these young guys you want to lock down. And you're going to be limited in how you can lock them down and or what else you can do with your team if you're paying Harden $50 million a year for those final 2 years. So that's one, okay? Two, he wants a playoff-ready roster that he wants to have in place. Rockets don't have that right now. They have a ton of potential, but they have nothing to let you believe that's a playoff caliber roster, because normally playoff teams in the NBA these days have at least two superstars. The good ones have three. So you're looking at that as being something. And then the third one is the one where everybody can miss me on how they said, well, when I pointed out after the first time when they wanted Harden back, and I said, see me in game 6 and 7 of series. See me when he can't finish in the playoffs. And then that you heard the rebuttal being, well, but I didn't want him for that. I want him to lead the league in assists again and be the facilitator. Well, that's where the third comment comes in, because he told, or someone told Haynes, I want to go back to being the man that has the ball on a plan. If that's the case, that is the final straw for why he does not and should not be a Rocket.
Yeah, 100%. And even though, and that's where this offseason almost is going to be fascinating, because, like, as soon as the Harden deal gets done, you have to pursue this team. Like, your whole timeline changes. Like, what Tillman said about phase two is learning how to win basketball games and getting back to the playoffs, and phase three is winning a championship. I think when he said that, it was more like, we're going to try to be in phase two for the next, like, season or two, and then start to focus on phase three and hopefully be a title contender by 2025, 2026. The second you sign James Harden, like, all of that has to change. You have to be aggressive in free agency. You have to explore Chris Middleton's. Yes, I know people hate it. Draymond Green. Like, you have to look at veteran players you're going to bring onto this roster to where you're going to try to win. Otherwise, there's no point in bringing in James. Like, you can't half-ass it. If you're going to go all, like, you can't partially, you can't put half your chips in. You got to go all the way in and say, we're going to try to win. We're also going to try to fund, we're going to try to do what the Warriors did, but better. I know we talked about this before where they have Kuminga and Jonathan and Wiseman. They failed to develop those guys while also winning. The Rockets have to try to do both at the same time.
So here's the thing. There has to be a plan A and a plan B. And your plan A is to continue to go down the road you've been going down of adding and stockpiling young players, high draft picks, trying to continue to develop the guys that you have in-house. If you bring in James Harden, then you got to go to plan B. Because plan B becomes more win-now heavy than it is planning for the future and sustained winning. And that means the number four pick is almost certainly out the door because you're going to look to package number four, at least one of your young players, if not more, to try and get that second superstar that you need to be in consideration for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. In order to do that, you're now stunting the growth of whatever youth movement that you were trying to create and the sustained long-term plan that you believe was in place. Now you're going completely 180 and trying to win for now. Now you're looking at a veteran center that comes in that isn't Şengün that can defend and put the ball in the superstar's hands. Now you're looking for role players that are on their second and third contracts that have one specific skill, a shooter, a defender. You're looking for guys that are going to come in and fortify what Harden and this other player would need to be competitive. And then you're going to have to also digest the fact that the chances of your long-term success are going to be based on getting in, maybe winning a series, as opposed to if you develop all these young, talented kids and then at the right time add the right veterans. And I've said Fred VanVleet is such a better add than James Harden because you can keep the long-term development in place with the kids, but you can teach them how to get better with a point guard that'll put them in positions to shoot and score.
What do you think the Rockets, from a big picture perspective next year, James Harden, Jalen Green, Jabari Smith, Alperen Şengün, let's call it Chris Middleton since the betting odds still have the Rockets as the favorite to land them. When you look at the Western Conference, you know, Denver's obviously elite. They just swept the Lakers. You've got this weird story about LeBron potentially retiring. They're like, I don't buy it all.
I don't. He wants to play with Bronny.
Yeah, and look, Bronny's going to be a mile away from him right next year. Like, he committed to USC for a reason. The idea of LeBron not playing next year is just baffling. And it's really just LeBron making everything about LeBron.
It's LeBron pulling the Aaron Rodgers of the NBA.
Yeah.
Just look at me and make sure you're talking about me.
But like Phoenix is, you know, they're probably going to move on from Chris Paul. You know, Sacramento, cute story. But like, are they for real? We'll see.
I think they are.
I hope so. It's kind of fun having Sacramento be good at something. Memphis, who knows with Ja Morant. Golden State could be a mess. What's crazy is that James Harden and Chris Middleton and another small veteran piece or two with Udoka, they might be a top six seed next year because I think the West is just
that's your ceiling. Like, it doesn't get much higher.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so you become the Rockets of the era of Aaron Brooks and the 41-41 teams that just squeak in or win, get in and maybe make a competitive first round exit. But you're not going to be a championship caliber team like Tillman wants. And you can't have it both ways. Like, the chances, it's the same discussion we've had over and over again. I've always made the comparison between the parallels of the Rockets and the Texans. At a certain point, if you're the Rockets, you either have to trust the process of developing the young players, or you have to take the medicine of understanding you can win enough to get in, but you're never going to get to the point where you can win consistently to win the big one.
I have one name I want to throw at you. So there's an article today in The Athletic talking about this LeBron stuff, and that if LeBron were to move on, the Lakers might try to reset to focus in on loading up to try to acquire Luka or Giannis when they're unhappy. And it mentions that they would likely trade Anthony Davis. I know he's got big injury problems.
Oh, man, does he?
But
And he also gets hurt a lot.
If you're going to sign James Harden,
I don't know if you got that or not.
Would you trade for Anthony Davis? Like, if Anthony Davis were on the market, you have all this draft capital, James Harden, Anthony Davis, maybe the worst marriage on the planet, but, like, would you try it?
I mean, it's grasping at straws. It's committing a whole lot financially.
At their peak, it would be
awesome.
But
again, in the West, with the uncertainty of so many different teams, again, you put yourself in the same position. You're going to get in. You might win a first-round series.
Yeah.
But then at that point, you have to be okay with the fact that it's going to end. And it's probably going to end abruptly.
You almost become the 76ers. Like it's
I don't know if you're even that talented.
No, but like the model of it. It's like Harden's in both places, Embiid and Davis, and then Jalen Green is kind of like your Tyrese Maxey.
You know, what the ceiling of that is? It's the Utah Jazz of the years where they had a great regular season, they got in, and then they were kicked out pretty quickly.
Yeah. If you're going to do it, like, it's not the worst idea in the world, but it'll be, who knows what the Rockets are going to do. I'm prepared for anything and everything this offseason. I'm prepared for none of this to happen. This is all a waste of breath.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping it is.
I hope James Harden isn't part of this mix because I believe that they still have enough talent they could develop to turn into more. But I really hate the thought of how Harden could stunt the development of both the players and the organization.
He's Joel Blank. You can find him on Twitter at Pac-Man Joel. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Josh, our producer today, on Twitter at I Am Jay Chevy. Coming up next, we talked about this yesterday a little bit. The flaws of sending down David Hensley, we saw really why that could be a bad decision for the Astros in last night's game. We talk about that next year on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.